Hello, listener Dan. You're so great. You sent us a tape player that doesn't work. Linoleum knife.
So, yeah. That's kind of where we are right
now. I made up that song just now. Hello, listener Dan. You sent us by FedEx in a giant box a lovely JVC tape player.
Hmm.
It doesn't work. I'm so happy and grateful for this lovely gift.
But yeah, and you totally win at it's the thought that counts.
It's the best, most thoughtful thing that has ever not worked in the history of this podcast.
And it was beautifully packaged.
It was.
Lots of bubble wrap. Yeah. And I mean, it was
so well protected.
We're hoping that you took it to work.
It was like you put a corpse in the mail. Everybody send us your things that don't work. This is my new hobby.
So that we can then take it to the electronics recycling thing that
West Hollywood City Hall has every other month has an electronics recycling project. Every time we have batteries or cords or things,
DVD players,
we send them to the West Hollywood Recycling Project. Anyway, no, seriously, thank you so much for this thing that you just sent us. And we were so excited. I put a cassette in it and everything. I pressed play and it didn't happen.
But it was very sweet of you.
It was so great. Also, we got your note about the book. And also, everybody who sent us notes about books or T-shirts that didn't arrive because of December being the very worstest month of all time in which to send items through the mail, we are going to fix all of those situations.
Yes.
If you didn't get a T-shirt, you didn't get a book that you ordered, paid for, and were expecting, we're on it. And if any of you are hearing that message for the first time and you didn't get your thing, tell us.
Yes, drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. This is Linoleum Knife.
Yes, by the way.
A podcast.
Of the cinema.
Yes.
I'm your number one host, Alonzo Duralde of therap.com and whattheflick.com. You can see my...
It's not whattheflick.com.
Wavy salt and pepper mane.
On YouTube,
and so yes, that's me, Alonzo Duralde.
And I'm Dave White of Movies.com, who refuses to learn how to do any of this stuff by himself, but then complains when it's not set up on time or things aren't going exactly 100% perfectly right.
Tell everyone the truth. Who's who?
I'm Alonzo.
I'm Dave.
Okay. Just so we clear that up.
I will be your cartoon dog.
So
Philip Seymour Hoffman is dead.
Is dead.
Just happened like an hour ago.
Yeah, it is. It's upsetting. He was only 2 months younger than I. And you know, I would say of the last, you know, 15 years, one of my absolute favorite, you know, actors.
He is one of the best actors in the United States.
Yeah.
No.
Just, you know, I wrote an obit today for the rap, and just going back and looking at his IMDb page, it is just staggering the number of amazing credits, you know, like movies he was in that were great, and then just movies that he was great in, even if they weren't, you know. I'm gonna pull it up because it's just worth a quick run through here. You know, he started out with interesting character parts in films like Scent of a Woman and Nobody's Fool, you know, Twister. I'd say really kind of burst into the public consciousness with Boogie Nights, where he played a very pathetic kind of hanger-on of the porn scene. But yeah, I mean, just run down here. The Big Lebowski, Happiness, Flawless, Magnolia, The Talented Mr. Ripley, State in Maine, Almost Famous, that great scene, as Lester Bangs, Love Liza, Punch Drunk Love, 25th Hour, Owning Mahoney, Cold Mountain, Capote. He won an Oscar in 2005. Mission Impossible 3, which is a silly movie, but he's really fun in it. The Savages, Before the Devil Knows You're Dead, Charlie Wilson's War, Synecdoche, New York, one of my favorite movies of the last millennium.
Yeah. Of the last decade, you mean?
Well.
Of the new millennium.
Of the new millennium, sure.
Yes.
Of ever.
One of my favorite films of the past 1,000 years. Exactly.
Doubt, Jack Goes Boating, the one film that he directed, and I thought was quite lovely, and I was hoping we would get more directorial efforts out of him.
Yeah.
The Ides of March, Moneyball, The Master, A Late Quartet, and then he had two movies at Sundance this year that I didn't get to see, God's Pocket and A Most Wanted Man.
Yeah.
He had, apparently, according to Lionsgate, he had pretty much completed his roles in the remaining Hunger Games movies, and I think he had just signed to do a series for Showtime, but I believe they shot only one episode of it, so I guess it will sort of exist as a standalone, but, you know, that's not going to be completed, unfortunately. And he died of a drug overdose. He had been battling...
he went to rehab for heroin.
He'd been dealing with a heroin addiction. And, you know, it's tragic when people, yes. You know, I mean, addiction is a disease. And people try to treat it, but sometimes a lot of times it gets the best of you.
I know a few heroin people in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're fine now. But, you know, that was, that's the, you know, very, very difficult to kick.
Yeah.
So, there will be no too soon-y jokes.
No.
Out of our mouths. You can rest.
That's what the internet is for.
That's, but we are not from the internet. Well, we are from the internet.
Well, yeah. That's what the rest of the internet is for. I'm going to go ahead and do my DVD picks this week because I'm going to do two, and they're both his films. One is Synecdoche, New York. It's the only film that's written and directed by Charlie Kaufman. I think it's such a mind-blowing film about
yes.
the nature of art and how we try to work out our own lives through
I love that
our
movie.
Art. It's just amazing. And Jack Goes Boating, which is... I think revealed him to be somebody who was really good at working with actors. He was really good at telling his story visually. He gives another great performance in it. It's funny, I went back and dug up my review of the DVD, and I sort of lamented that there wasn't a director commentary on it, because Hoffman, you know, was a really good, you know, he seemed really articulate in interviews. I think he probably would have had a lot to say about his process as a director, and you know, sadly now we will not get any more films from him, so check that one out by all means.
The Master.
Of course.
The Master. That's all, you know.
Yeah, he worked with Paul Thomas Anderson a lot. Like, he was in Hard Eight. Boogie Nights, Magnolia, Punch Drunk Love.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the two of them had a thing.
But The Master is really just...
And, of course, it's one of the things I now super regret not going. I remember getting invited... When Jack Goes Boating came out theatrically, I got invited to a screening where there was a Q&A afterwards where Anderson was going to be interviewing Hoffman.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which I thought would have been really cool.
Yeah. Now, we were both once in the same room with him at the LAFCA Awards when Capote
that's right.
Won. Although we didn't have any interaction with him.
No.
Our interaction was with his co-star, Catherine Keener.
Right.
who turned out to be a madcap lady.
She was game.
She was gung-ho for fun. She was ready to enjoy fun.
It's weird. My other sort of Capote story is also not really about Hoffman, but I remember I was at LAX going to the Toronto Film Festival that year, and I wound up being on the same flight with the Capote folks.
Uh-huh.
And I saw Hoffman sort of at a distance, and then standing near me was Dan Futterman,
yes.
who wrote the movie and was also an actor.
Yeah.
And we had just had him in The Advocate because, remember, for a while he was playing... He played one of Will's boyfriends on Will and Grace.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
I don't remember. I never watched that show. I don't remember.
Well, it's interesting because Futterman's straight, but he did all these, like, he wrote Capote. He was, you know, he's on Will and Grace. He was in that movie Urbania. Remember that one?
Yes.
You know, so he played a lot of gay roles. Anyway, so we just started,
So he was pre-Franco.
Basically, yes. So we get to talking, and he's very cool, and basically, and then I eventually realized that, like, Hoffman and some other people involved in the film were flying in first class, and Futterman was going coach.
I'm sure they all, drew straws or something?
No. It's basically everything you need to know about how writers are treated.
The writer, in Hollywood. The writer flies coach.
The writer flies coach.
My DVD will be The Master.
Fair enough.
Since I didn't pick a DVD.
I knew you didn't.
For DVD picking. I'd forgotten. Mm. It's the thing I always forget. It's until the last minute. I always forget about
that. And the letters.
Until, no. I'm look at the letters.
No,
the letters.
This time, yes.
Yeah, look.
You've forgotten them a lot.
I'm really improving.
We've only been doing this show for 2+ years now.
Three.
Oh, three, you're right. Now,
Flies. Get your numbers right.
Time flies.
You know what? My trajectory of professional podcastery.
Yes.
Is, if you could see the chart that I have created.
True. You started at zero.
I've gone up, like a steep ladder of success.
And yet you have so far to go.
Only garbage movies came out this week.
Yeah, before we
because it's still January. Before we even get, though it's actually February 2nd
now.
2nd. Yeah.
Before we get into the garbage movies, a reminder to everybody that we have recorded our second special "You Pay for It" episode DVD commentary.
Would you call it the special hors d'oeuvre?
My special hors d'oeuvre. Dave and I have directed written,
recorded. Produced, and danced fully.
Yes. We have recorded
an extra episode of Linoleum Knife.
Yes, a DVD
Linoleum Knife presents more Linoleum Knife.
Right. For the Apple, the Crackpot 1980 biblical allegory cum disco musical set in the big bad future world of 1994.
That's 1984 plus 10.
See what we did there?
No.
It's...
Turn off your phone.
Sorry.
Turn off the phone. You're in a theater right now.
I needed them to look at IMDb. Anyway, it's a very crazy movie, which if you've never seen, you need to see. And then after you see it, you need to listen to us talk about it.
Yeah.
It's currently streaming on Netflix, but it looks better on DVD, which you can also get it on.
As well as it can look anywhere.
Well, right, yeah. I'm not. It's not like Roger Deakins shot this thing, but you know, it's.
This is our second one. There will be more. Did you tell them all the details of ordering?
I did not.
All right. Here's how you do it.
You PayPal $1.99 to linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
Include your
email address of where you want the file sent.
We can send the file to you.
And we will send you an audio file, and you can listen to it while you're watching the movie. You can listen to it in the car or at the gym, and we'll sort of try and visually fill in the blanks for you.
I was thinking about this one after we finished it, and this one has even less to do with what's actually occurring on screen than White Christmas was. Like, we did one for White Christmas in December,
right.
and we were fairly strict about sticking to the scenes in terms of what we were talking about. And here we were a little looser. I mean, well, no, actually, we were a lot looser.
Yeah,
we just went off and talked about other things as the movie played. But
I mean, we're talking about the film, but we're not necessarily talking about the film timed to what you're seeing
right
on screen.
Although sometimes, I mean, occasionally there are moments where we're like, okay, and now here's the part where blah 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 happens.
Right.
So if you want to listen to it while you watch it with the sound turned down or however you want to do it, that's fine too. First of all, we urge you to watch The Apple. It's one of the most sort of incendiary, bad films, maybe of all time.
Yeah.
In terms of its perfectly wrongheaded state of being,
it has a consistent
from moment to moment.
It has a consistently unified vision that is always off.
Yeah, and so we love this film.
Yes,
and we wanted to do a commentary that we thought was, you know, maybe full of information that you don't know unless you are already an Apple expert, like our pal Mark Hoik, who helped us a lot with questions that I had, including the mystery of whatever happened to
George Gilmore.
One of its stars, George Gilmore. You'll have to find out the answer. The sad, pathetic answer to that question, if you actually go give us $1.99 right. of your cash.
We want to thank a listener, Robbie, by the way, for throwing in an extra tip.
Did he?
Yes.
That's unnecessary, but we like
but
it.
But it's appreciated.
We're happy to,
we're happy to sell you a commentary for $1.99.
Give us all your money if you like.
If you want to throw a little more in the kitty, you know, no one's going to complain.
Yeah, never. Never. That's like being given extra, you know, treats.
Exactly.
Cakes and things.
More candy at Halloween. Okay, so the big movie this week is
That Awkward moment. Yeah.
Why don't you explain what it's about?
All right, so these three dicks who are, and you can say that on TV, so that means you can say it on a clean podcast.
I think so.
Yeah. If you buy the Apple commentary, you'll hear us say swears. A couple times. Not very much, yeah. but it was necessary to report on a thing that exists.
Right.
And it's not on iTunes, so it doesn't really count as part of this good, clean podcast.
That's right.
Anyway, That Awkward Moment is about these three dicks who are young 20-something bros in Manhattan, all of whom have really terrific apartments.
I was thinking about that.
Especially Zac Efron, who lives in like this most bohemian of lofts. And lots of art everywhere. Like he's got art on the wall.
Well,
like,
he is an artist.
I understand that, but it's not like he made all that art. I mean, are we meant to believe that he did? Because if he's an artist.
I don't think so.
None of that art looks like the garbagey stuff he does for the chick-lit arm of a publishing house that he works for.
No.
Seriously, he and Miles Teller play like co-creators of the worst
book covers
I have ever seen in my life. And there's a really just the funny moment in the film.
Unintentional.
Happens at the beginning where he and Miles Teller present a blank piece of, you know, board to the pitch meeting. And they're like, and everyone's like, why is there nothing there? And he's like, because we're going to go stark black and white. And he immediately draws them, you know, squiggle this, squiggle that, and then a shoe on the board. And then Zach, everyone starts talking about, like, the magic of shoes and how women, like, their pleasure centers all open up fully and flower for shoes. And they cut to every woman's face in the pitch room. And every woman's face in the pitch room has this, like, knowing smirk. Like, he just touched them in a special spot.
Like, he just turned on everyone's vibrator or something. Yeah.
It's and then bizarre. The boss lady says, I love it. And that's how you know what kind of movie this is going to be. This is a film about dudes doing whatever they want. And women all saying, ooh, yes, daddy. Honestly, that's the film. Now, along the way, they are involved in comedy scrapes and mishaps. Many awkward moments. None of which are funny.
No.
None of which mean anything. And all of which involve them crashing something that a woman is doing, or stealing something, or trespassing somewhere, or humping a toilet, or
thinking that a woman is a prostitute.
Or thinking that the woman they just hooked up with is a prostitute, and then telling her, you know. So it's like, it's a film about men doing things to women and getting away with it and everything being okay because
they look like Zac Efron and Michael B. Jordan.
And Michael B. Jordan. And Miles Teller, who's comedy handsome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so, here's what's weird. Our bro, Amy Nicholson, she liked this movie. I haven't read her review yet, but I'm going to.
Yeah, I now feel like I am absolved from having to watch Pain and Gain. If Amy liked this thing. I'm out.
I need to have a conversation with her. I told her, I was like, this movie just made me want to kill things. There is nothing valuable in this film at all.
And it's a movie that wants to be sort of shockingly R-rated and you know, really pushing the envelope. And it's so tame.
Uh-huh.
It's so not body.
It doesn't use its R rating.
No.
At all. It just, they say some F words.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that's really strange because you've got the R. You're going for the R.
Yeah.
You've got those language in your script. Be the R rating. Be as wild as the boner in the toilet scene. You know, that's one scene in the film.
Yeah.
And that's as crazy as it gets.
There's a dumb scene where they go shopping in a sex store and there's a bunch of dildos, you know, and then Zac Efron wears one to an event because, oh, I thought it was a costume party, right. But it was right. Actually a dress-up cocktail party.
But everyone thinks he's so great for being wacky. And he just walks in and doesn't, there's not an ounce of embarrassment in him. No. You know, they're sort of like, yeah, I did this accidental thing. Check me out, everybody.
Well, and the crazy thing is that even after he realizes his mistake,
I've got a 14-inch dildo hanging from my pants.
And he decides to stay at the party to show what a good sport he is.
Yeah.
He never takes off the dildo.
Right. Yeah, it just kind of swings around and everything. It's a very lazy film.
Yes.
It's very lazily written, and here's how you know. I counted. There are 5 complete scenes in this movie that end with somebody calling somebody else
an idiot.
Yeah. That's the punchline of the scene. Like, that's the boom at the end of the scene.
You're an idiot. They do that a lot in this movie.
5 times.
Plus the fact that the scene that is tossed off in the beginning is just kind of a by-the-by conversation. Only later do we realize, oh, wait, that was a key plot moment. We're basically, you know, Teller and Efron play singles. Michael B. Jordan has just been kicked out of the house by his wife. So the two of them, to make Jordan feel better, like, basically, they sort of pledge, you know, with coffee cups, that they're going to stay single to sort of bro it out together.
It is a pledge that has all the gravity of 3 guys standing on a street corner holding coffee.
Yeah, like it's just nothing moment. And then later in the film, you realize, oh, wait, the entire movie is now pivoting on that scene.
Zac Efron practically starts crying at the end because he's like, I just wanted my friends back. And I thought to myself, when were you apart? There's never been a moment in this film, not even an awkward one, where you guys were apart. Where did they go? Is there a backstory that we don't know about? You guys were estranged until the moment the audience got involved?
Yeah,
it's just not anything happening.
Yeah.
And
obviously Teller and Jordan are in very good career moments right now. Teller's coming off of, you know, People Love the Spectacular Now, his movie Whiplash just sold at Sundance.
Right.
You know, Jordan was considered a serious Oscar contender for Fruitvale Station. So, you know, whatever. This is the dumb movies you make on your way up. Efron, bless him, is still trying so hard to be full-grown movie star and not a former teen idol.
Here's the problem.
And this is not the movie that's going
to
do it.
Here's the problem. He needs to go out and get in about 7 fist fights.
Mess up his nose.
Mess up do something. Break that nose. Do something to damage that pretty, 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 pretty kitten face.
Yes. No, I.
Because there's no getting around it.
In my review, I said no matter how much scotch he swills or scruff he grows or F-bombs he drops, he still has a face like a basket of kittens.
There is, to his credit, okay, he is aging into a masculine-looking dude. In other words, he won't keep any sort of pretty boyishness for very much longer. He's still got it a little bit. But from
his dreamy eyes.
From teenage years to now, he's definitely become a man.
Mm.
All right. It's not like that Leo thing where he's going to be 39 and you still
think he's 12.
Think he's 12. He's definitely becoming a man, but he's so handsome that it's impossible. Like, he's actually better looking now than when he started.
Mm.
Like, he's just, it's a freakish thing to watch someone get better and better looking. And he needs to do something serious quick, or else that pretty face is going to sink him.
Or he'll just wind up on television.
Or he'll wind up on television.
Yeah. But yeah, no, it's what's that line from About Last Night? An industrial accident would be the best thing that could ever happen to you.
Right.
So yeah, but you know, I think Efron has charisma. Yes. You know, he has...
He's very appealing.
Yeah, he has a certain level of chops. Yeah. So, I mean, I think there are things that he could be doing.
He hasn't found the right thing.
You know, like, I mean, on paper, yes, I'm sure the Paperboy was the right thing to do, but that wasn't really going to help either.
The Paperboy is the best thing he's been in.
Well, you know...
In a very real way.
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah.
But anyway, so it'll be interesting to see what his trajectory is. But yeah, that awkward moment is not going to give him any boosts.
I did like, there were two things the movie did get right. One, everybody stalks everybody on Facebook.
Right.
Number two, nobody goes to book readings. Those are the two things it got right.
This is true.
It gets nothing else right. Not anything. It has this bizarre understanding of reality that exists only in the dumbheadedest of sitcoms.
Yeah.
To the point where, you know, you at the end, he's wistfully thinking about Imogen Poots.
God. And still giggling over Imogen Poots. whose American accent is about maybe the teensiest bit. The teensiest bit better than Keira Knightley's.
She's got an okay American accent.
In Jack Ryan's Shadow Recruit.
Zac Efron is so upset. Here's what he says. I'm thinking about the couch in her apartment. I know what the couch looks like in her place. And I can't stop thinking about all the other people who will sit on that couch.
I've been on that couch.
It's the best. Somebody wrote that. Somebody wrote that. You know what it made me watch? You know what it made me wish? Right. It made me wish I was watching Boeing Boeing.
No, well, that's a movie.
You know, like, it's about these dudes who are, like, terrible and just, you know, trying to run a game with all these women and everything, but they're falling in love at the same time and blah, blah, blah. And during this entire dreary thing, I kept thinking, you know, Boeing is fun to watch. Lots of slamming doors.
Exactly.
And people running in and out, and someone's in a towel. Woo! I gotta get out of here, you know.
Crazy stewardess farce.
So, that's, yeah. It sucks.
The sad thing is, I have seen a movie not unlike that awkward moment, and it's even worse. And we'll talk about it next week. So, also this week is Labor Day, a movie that got so buried when they did their awards one-week run of it.
They barely showed it to anyone.
Yeah, I didn't even know it was happening, so we didn't even talk about it on the show that week, which is just as well, because now we can talk about it as it goes national.
I remain very proud of my little movies.com tagline.
It's pretty great.
Pie me up, pie me down.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Nicely done.
Everybody line up to kiss my face. Kiss my face. So it's about a guy, Josh Brolin, who, let's call him a reluctant murderer. He murdered, but he didn't mean to.
The nicest convict around.
He didn't mean, it's not like he meant to murder.
It was on accident.
It was on accident. And then he went to the joint. And then he broke out of the joint. And he's the worst prison escapee in the world. Because he doesn't go anywhere far away. He goes straight to the Kmart.
Okay. Well, in his defense, he broke out of the hospital where they just took out his appendix.
Right.
He can't really do, like, a major, you know, fugitive on the train thing or anything until his sutures heal up. So he's got to find somebody nearby where he can hide out and rest up and heal. That's the point.
You know what? He could have found a car or something to steal or whatever, you know?
He's too sensitive for that kind of thing. He is a sweet, sweet man.
Yeah, he is. So he goes to the Kmart or Value Village or whatever it is. The Pick and Save. I'm not sure what. It's a discount store of some kind. Sad, depressed, divorcee Kate Winslet is there with her kid who's like 12.
And 11, who takes care of her.
And who basically takes care of her. Because she's always in bed asleep because she's depressed.
Right.
Josh Brolin walks up to them in the store and without a weapon of any sort, kidnaps them.
Yes.
How does this happen? Why do they agree?
He insinuates himself.
The film just says this is how it's going to be.
Into their lives.
Yes. He's like, this is what, I'm quoting the movie now. He says, this needs to happen. Prove it, big dude. Like, how? What are you going to do to me in the discount store? Are you going to murder me in the discount store? You'll go right back to the joint. There'll be other people here who'll be like, hey, you stop murdering her. Like, there's not a thing. You don't kidnap anybody that way. Nobody gets kidnapped that way. Except Kate Winslet.
Yes.
Who, I assume, in the book that this is based on by Joyce Maynard, former yes. protege and lover of J.D. Salinger.
Who had her own weird pen pal relationship with a prisoner that she wrote about years later.
Yeah. I assume the book explains why she
lets him in the car,
goes along and lets him in the car and take over her life and tie her up and tie up her son. And
I have not read the book, but now
and
that
I never will.
Now that I've seen the movie, I'm never going to.
And then as they're tied up, he begins handymanning his way into their hearts.
Yes. He makes chili. He makes pie.
He cleans the gutters. He
makes the car work.
Fixes the car. He fixes the furnace. He
teaches the kid how to throw a baseball.
Fixes a creaky floorboard. He helps the kid with the baseball. He learns the rumba. And I'm not making up any of this. We're not exaggerating.
He gives Kate Winslet that good lovin'.
Yeah. And you can hear her being all like, and the kid is in bed in the next room being like, oh, great. You know, the sensual pie making, though, is really the backbone of this film.
Yeah, this movie does for produce what Ghost did for clay.
Yeah, only it's weirder because the kid is involved in making the pie.
Oh, right.
All three of them have their hands squishing around in the peaches in the bowl together. Ew. So then he forks her crust. Big close-up of him putting that fork right deep into that crust. Gonna let it all breathe.
We should point out,
when he forks her crust, she really likes it.
We should point out, this is directed by Jason Reitman.
Yeah.
Who, up until now, has been a pretty good filmmaker.
Yep.
He did Up in the Air and Young Adult and Juno and Thank You for Smoking.
I don't know. I mean, the responsibility for this lies, I guess, squarely with him because he adapted the book and he directed it.
Yep.
And maybe there was some problem in the editing room where, you know, key bits of information about how this sort of thing can even come to happen.
Well, here's what I find exasperating.
Were left out of the film?
I mean, you talk about things not being explained. A lot of my problems with the film have to do with things being over-explained, because there are a lot
There's
of...
There's also that problem.
There are character moments that are subtle, but if you're paying attention to what's being said and what's not being said, to the looks on the faces of Winslet and Brolin and
right.
the kid, you will pick up on what's going on. Apparently,
that's not good enough.
That's not good enough. So we have to have Tobey Maguire narrate the movie as the kid, now an adult, telling you every single thing and underlining right. it. And they might as well like give him the John Madden chalk and like have him circle, yes. Oh, see here, now she's going to walk over here because
right.
this means she's in love with him, you know.
Here's my favorite bit, and it does constitute a spoiler. If you have a problem with that, you can turn down your volume. But if you do go see this movie, the ending, I had to sit in the press screening and stifle the howling laughter that I really, really like had inside me. It was dying to come out.
I had that too at the Writers Guild.
He's back in prison at the end of the film due to a variety of circumstances. And here comes the spoiler, so turn down your volume for like 15 seconds. Starting now. And he's sitting at his writing desk, and there's a picture of a pie on the wall, like other prisoners have, you know, naked ladies or whatever. He's got the pie. He's writing a letter to the kid who's now grown up and is Tobey Maguire. And he says, and the article is, the thing on the wall is a picture of a pie that Tobey Maguire has made because he's now a professional, famous baker.
Right.
And Josh Brolin is writing him a letter saying, I came across a photo of a very familiar looking pie.
it's the best thing in the world.
Except it is the worst.
Our good friend Robert Abley, who was on the show recently, was at the same screening I was at, and he had the line that I so wish I had come up with, which is,
yes,
this movie wants to be Douglas Sirk, and it landed on Nicholas Sparks.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
It's
beautifully shot and well-acted terrible.
And it ain't no Ghost Wife, I'll tell you that. Yeah. Ghost Wife has a kicker at the end. The Ghost Wife.
Yes. Your late mother.
This just has a very familiar
looking pie and Tobey Maguire.
Came across a photo of a very familiar looking pie. In addition to everything being ridiculous, the message of the movie is very similar to that awkward moment in that, men, it's okay to do anything you want. As long as you're good inside, the lady's going to find out. She's going to learn to love you.
How? Because you're so sensitive.
Even if you have kidnapped her, held her hostage, tied her up, endangered her life and that of her son.
As long as you fix the house.
As long as you're, you know, doing some laundry and doing some ironing and fixing that, changing the oil in the car. Mm. Giving her that good D, you know.
What did you think? What did you think of his chili?
It looked a little lumpy.
That's what I was thinking too.
Your chili. I'll tell you who makes some good chili. Det Alonzo Duralde.
This guy.
You make some good chili. It's one of the three things you know how to make. So I'm super into it when you make it, because it means I'm not cooking.
Did you pick up any pie crust tips from this movie?
No. No. I want Martha Stewart to watch this film and just roll, and I want a camera on her as she sees the pie scene, and I just want to watch the eye rolls.
Because they apparently had a pie consultant. I think Margie interviewed her for Squid Ink.
Was it Sandra Bullock's sister?
I don't think so.
Who's the big pie lady?
Yeah.
No, she wrote the book Pie It Forward.
Yeah.
That's really the name of her book.
I know.
Margie gave it to me. It's a good book.
Yeah.
It is the number one bad name of a cookbook of all time.
I think so.
It's All Good is number two.
Gwyneth.
but yeah. Oh, no, I'm sure they had a pie consultant. The pies look very rustic and lovely.
Yeah.
But, oh, man. He's so, and here's the thing. He's so smarmy and so, like, artisanal about the way he makes it. He's like this mystical pie man who comes from prison. He's like, oh, you really got to, don't forget the salt. And, you know, he's like throwing things in. He's just like very sort of like the sensual baker.
If the movie were set 15 years later, he'd be grating Gruyere on top.
Right. Yeah, yeah, exactly. The pain. If that guy came to my house out of prison, I'd be like, could you stop being insufferable for like just a minute? Like, pull a gun on me or something. Prove your worth as a man. Yeah.
You're not doing a very good job as a captor.
Yeah.
The other movie.
So that one sucks too.
Yes.
Talk about the movie that sucks that you saw that I did not see.
At Middleton, which I didn't think at first was going to suck, but the suck creeps up. It stars Andy Garcia and Vera Farmiga, and they're hands down the best thing in it. Like, the two of them together are really fun to watch, and you, after a while, wish you were watching them in a much better movie, because they really click, they have great chemistry, they are super charismatic, and in my review, I only partially jokingly suggested it'd be great to see them do a reboot of Heart to Heart. I think that would be great. Like, that's the kind of couple thing they've got going. Anyway, they are two parents who are not married to each other, bringing their respective kids to this college tour. And over the course of the day, they sort of wind up getting separated from the tour. And, you know, she's a bohemian free spirit and he's a stuffy heart surgeon. But they manage to, like, hit it off. And, you know, they have wacky misadventures and sort of fall in love and have to figure out, you know, what are they going to do? And what are they hiding in their lives? And yada, yada, yada. And it kind of just ultimately becomes bogus. But they're great, and Tysa Farmiga, who is Vera Farmiga's 21 years younger sister, plays her daughter in the movie. And she also played, Tysa played the young Vera in Vera's directorial debut, Higher Ground, which I'm still trying to get Dave to watch.
I will.
Anyway, so it's it is unfortunately really badly written. The once that you start getting to the revelations, they're all really kind of hokey and forced. There's some really clunky moments where they're like smoking pot in a guy's dorm room and just like these really sort of hokey moments. And Tysa Farmiga plays this really super ambitious, you know, young college student, and you know she learns things. Everybody learns things. It's kind of a drag, but it's shot beautifully. Like apparently they filmed it on three different college campuses in Washington State, and it's very sunny and breezy, and you know they steal bicycles and ride across the campus, and it's all very French. You know, the score even has accordions and you know like string section on it. And so by the time they wind up in a projection booth where they're showing the Umbrellas of Cherbourg, I was like, well, yeah, I saw that coming, because every time they're grabbing each other's arms and running across campus, it looks like they're just recreating the Cousin Cuisine poster.
Yep.
So yeah, it's kind of meh. It's a negligible movie, but if it pops up on cable, you might want to watch the first half. No, you might want to watch
it. Watched it on a DVD screener, and I walked in and out of the living room doing things that were important, like folding laundry, and every scene that I walked past just looked worse than the last one.
You might watch some of it on cable to watch Farmiga and Garcia, because they're really cool together. They're too good for this movie.
I'm too good to look at it.
Yeah, fine.
How do you like that?
Okay, so we've done DVDs. So letters.
It sure is time for those letters.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get this letter party started.
Woo, cookie bread.
I'm trying to, my letters won't come up because Facebook won't leave. Hang on. Leave page. Yes, here I am. All right. Hello, gentlemen. He's talking to me.
Uh-huh.
I have lists of the best and worst films of 2013. Alonzo, I just bought your book, Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas.
Yay.
But I can get 101... But I can get 101 must-see movies for gay men, because I just got married to my wife, and I think it will be a little weird for her to see that on my shelf. I think he was trying to say he can't get 101, but because he's not a gay, and his wife might think that he's a gay for reading a book by a gay about gays.
Look, it's a book for everyone, and if your wife thinks you're gay, that's not my problem.
If your wife thinks you're gay, you got more troubles than just a book on the shelf.
Indeed. Just saying.
Where are we now with this letter? Okay. Anyway, here it is. The list of films, along with a few words why. Please read them. The best from 10 to 1. Honorable mentions. Before Midnight and Rush. 10. Inside Llewyn Davis. Beautifully filmed and acted. The best Coen Brothers film since No Country for Old Men. 9. Prisoners. Which you still have not seen, Alonzo Duralde. Dark, disturbing, and powerful acting make this thriller incredible. I don't fully agree, but that's fine. 8, Blue Jasmine, the best Woody Allen film since Match Point, enough said. A romantic comedy without Katherine Heigl. which that makes it automatically good, I think, right?
Wait, is he saying Blue Jasmine is a romantic comedy?
No, enough said.
Oh, enough said. Alright.
Gravity, Captain Phillips, The Secret Life of Walter Mitty.
Oh,
he says, I don't care that this is rotten. I love it.
Well, all right then.
Cough farther away from the microphone. Spreading your cafeteria all over everything. Your cafeteria. 3, Dallas Buyers Club.
Ew.
2, The Conjuring. Mm. 1, Upstream Color.
Mm.
Yeah. All right, so... How are we going to do this? How do we gauge you?
Not even having seen Prisoners, I'm going to call shenanigans Prisoners, on that being on
Walter
your top
Mitty, 10. Dallas Buyers Club. So for you, that's a 70.
Well, I'll give him Prisoners since I haven't seen it. So for me, it's an 80. And for you, it's also an 80 because you'll give him Mitty?
I'll give you Mitty because I like Mitty. I would even give you half a Dallas Buyers Club and half a Prisoners, because Prisoners just looks so great.
So you're giving him a 90. All right, fine. You're 85% knife.
You're 85% knife. Oh, he's got a worst, too. Uh-huh. Grown-ups, too. Sorry, we've got so many letters to read. I'm just going to read your titles. forgive us. Grown-ups, too. Getaway. Pain and Gain. A Haunted House. The Lone Ranger. 12 Years a Slave.
Oof. What's his description on that one?
Boring and painfully an Oscar Beatty film. I give them credit for going where they need to go, but I still hated it. It will win every Oscar it's nominated for, and I will be unhappy.
All right.
Paranoia, Free Birds, Texas Chainsaw 3D, and Movie 43. And at Movie 43... He says, I want Alonzo to say nothing until Dave is done saying what I have to say. This is the definition of what is wrong with Hollywood. Stupid jokes and premises that make nothing more than pure crap. Yes, it's cool, there is a huge cast involved, but I do not want to see Hugh Jackman with balls on his neck or Richard Gere with an eye babe.
Me. You and everybody else.
But there's so much more in Movie 43 than just Richard, than just Hugh Jackman with balls on his neck. There's a cartoon cat raping himself while masturbating to Josh Duhamel. You don't get that in every film.
You Halle Berry blowing out a blind kid's birthday candles and getting gigantic prosthetic breasts while Stephen Merchant becomes Asian.
That's right.
I like that.
Yay, Movie 43! Woo! So, okay, that's from Matthew, whose last name I can never pronounce. He's written us a couple times. Schufrider? 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 Sorry, dude.
Here, Schufrider, don't bother me.
Next time you email us.
You want a phonetic?
Write your phonetic name. That way we can pronounce it properly. I like to pronounce things properly. I'm married to Alonzo Juan Ampuero Duralde.
Yes, well.
Yeah, so that's, you know, that's a mouthful
for a lot of folks. I know, we try to be sensitive to that sort of
thing. Yeah, I want to pronounce your name right. Hi, guys. Great work on the podcast. You guys are my favorite film critics. We are also our favorite film critics. My favorite episodes include the one where Alonzo talks about the writer of Safety Not Guaranteed at the Indie Awards and the one where Dave White meticulously describes every plot detail of Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. I just had the chance to watch the film versus digital video documentary side by side on Netflix. Have you guys checked it out yet? I'm curious to hear what you would think of it. It's funny you say that. It's been sitting on our TV forever.
Yeah, I've had a screener of it for a long time, and I've been meaning to watch it. I just haven't done it yet.
It is a top mount unwatched.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm curious to hear what you would think of it. I found it interesting. I also like that Keanu Reeves is the interviewer. He's very good at conveying no emotion whatsoever.
I'll say.
And I think
I haven't even seen this movie.
And I think it's funny when he randomly starts yelling at the person he's interviewing for no apparent reason. Anyway, I made a list of the top five movies I saw in 2013. I like that.
Oh,
concise.
Nice.
Though I saw many great movies last year, there's still a handful of films I need to see. Therefore, I decided to write a top five list, since there's a fair chance that my 6 to 10 picks will get pushed off the list in the future. Here they are, 5 to 1, The Spectacular Now.
Mm-hmm.
Before Midnight,
mm-hmm.
Gravity,
mm-hmm.
Francis Ha,
mm-hmm.
American Hustle.
All right.
Best luck with the show, and keep up the good work. Ron B. Thank you, Ron B.
The sloop Ron B.
Dear David Alonzo with a Z.
Oh, come on. If you
have extra pumpkin beer left over from the Christmas that you are not going to drink, then get on the internet and find yourself a nice beer bread recipe. It's really the only thing it's good for.
See, I told you that we could cook with it.
That is from M.A. Ross.
Okay.
I'll do that.
All right.
Hey, Dave and Alonzo, my name's Brittany, and I'm a relatively new listener, having only just discovered you via What the Flick.
Oh, welcome, Brittany.
I've become a huge fan of the show, and listening to your banter is always a good way to spend an hour each week. Anyways, I was wondering if you could knife a list of some of my favorite movies. These are 10 that I could watch endlessly. Thanks, and keep up the great work. Here they are. The Social Network.
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Terrific.
We love that. Both Godfathers, Parts 1 and 2.
Yeah.
Alien.
Mm-hmm.
Moon.
Oh, good one. Just
so great.
Yeah.
Y'all got to see Moon. If you haven't seen Moon, it's really, really cool.
And his other one, too, I liked.
What was the other one? I forget the name of
Jake Gyllenhaal, Vera Farmiga.
The one about
Michelle Monaghan.
The one with the loop, train in the loop on the
where he stuff over and over the, again in the same the moment. Something to stop the
Magnum Force.
Is
that the name of it?
Yes, it's Magnum Force. Keep going on our list. Let me look it up.
Mean Girls.
Okay.
Casablanca.
Mm.
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Black Swan.
Yeah.
Umberto D.
Yeah.
And she writes, combines two of the saddest things in movies ever, dogs and the elderly. It left me a sobbing mess. Brittany, dude, you get 100%.
Though. Absolutely. Source code.
Magnum Force.
Magnum Force. Source code, also worth seeing. But yes, Moon is terrific.
This is from David in Seattle from today. He sent us a picture of Chris Lavoie from the Stephanie Miller Show wearing our Linoleum Knife t-shirt.
Nice.
And he writes, Chris's sour expression may be due to the discussion at the time of Chris not being a dog person.
Ah, yes, because they're currently taping the show at Stephanie's house with her two enormous, like, horsey-sized dogs, apparently.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, Chris Lavoie of Stephanie Miller Show, our most well-known listener, perhaps.
Could be.
Unless there's some other person who's more famous than Chris Lavoie of the Stephanie Miller Show out there listening. Are there any of you closeted well-known people listening to the show? If so, let
us
know.
We'd be happy to send you a t-shirt.
We'd be happy to send you a t-shirt that you could model for us for the internet.
And you can wear it when you're in Vanity Fair next time.
Well, he's not a dog person.
Apparently not.
What does that mean?
You know, there's cat people and there's dog people.
Who doesn't like dogs?
There are people who don't like dogs.
I'm allergic to them, but I love them.
I love dogs, too. I don't like cats.
I'm more allergic to the cats, but I like them, too.
I do not
like all the doggies and all the kitties.
I don't firsthand understand not being a dog person, but I can understand somebody not being a dog person the way that I am.
How can you be a dog person and but also be an ABC listening person? How can you be both of them?
There are a lot of Venn diagrams that intersect in many different ways. Dude.
Okay,
I don't even know that that he listens to it. I think he said that all those songs came out of Stephanie's iPod.
When Smokey Six. For which I will never forgive him.
Be nice.
I'm being nice for now. Okay, I had two emails in a row from Dave K.
Mm-hmm.
Who lives in a book by Franz Kafka. Finally listened to the Manola year-end wrap-up episode and just wanted to drop you guys a note saying that this is the best movie conversation and analysis I've heard all year. You know why that is?
Because Manola was on.
Because Manola was on and I barely spoke. I really wish you could get those two, Manola and Robert Aberling, get them on like once a month. The interplay between all four of you is just fantastic. And what he means is the interplay between the three of you and me occasionally going, yeah. I am, of course, a Manola fanboy since she loves movies like Southland Tales and Domino, which are both great films.
Still never seen Domino.
And then the next email says, whoops, she just said she hated Wolf of Wall Street. All bets are off.
Boy, they will turn on you in a second.
Well, that's right. And those are the letters.
That's it?
That's it.
I thought I sent you some
that's
more.
It for today.
Oh, I see. Okay.
We're still catching up.
Okay,
we're
still catching up. Because we haven't even hit the hour mark yet.
So what? It's Super Bowl Sunday. I've got sports teams to go look at while they... sports?
Uh-huh.
And
there's no going to be no sportsing in this house.
I got some
Puppy Bowl and commercials.
Sports foods to create. I got sports vacuuming.
I'll tell you yet another Super Bowl Sunday and us without a crock pot to make Rotel dip in.
I guess we'll have to get a crock pot.
We need a crock pot. Ideally, NASCAR crock pot.
First, I'm going to go to the pawn shop and get us a working tape player.
Okay.
Once again, thank you, Dan.
Thank you, Dan. We do appreciate the
a lovely gesture.
It was very sweet of you.
First, I'll go to the pawn shop to get a new boombox, a Radio Raheem boombox.
Okay.
And then we'll get a NASCAR crock pot.
Okay.
Because they've got like 20 different NASCAR crockpots.
I'm sure they do.
No, they seriously
do.
No,
of course they do.
Like all the different NASCAR dudes have their own crockpot.
Right. Who would we get?
That one guy.
Oh, him.
No, isn't there a lady NASCAR driver?
I think there is a
lady.
Let's
get the lady one. You're right. Because she's probably cool.
Danica Patrick, is that her name?
I don't remember her name.
Is she NASCAR or is she the other?
I don't know what she
is. I don't know anything.
Bonnie Bedelia.
Yes, get the Bonnie Bedelia crock pot. Crock like a wheel.
Bonnie Bedelia in Magnum Force.
If we titled our episodes things, that would be the title of this episode. No, I want to make Rotel dip with the cubed Velveeta and the canned Rotel and the, like, spicy carne asada.
Look, if you want to go to the store right now and get that stuff, I bet Jill will let us just do it in her microwave.
Not the same.
It's not the same?
Not the same.
We had it at Thanksgiving, and it was made in the microwave, wasn't it?
No, that was a crock pot.
Oh, that was a crock pot?
Yeah, I helped.
Oh, I was just standing around.
You were just eating it.
That's right.
No, it needs a crock pot. And carne asada takes time, so, you know. It's a goal for the future.
It's good to have goals.
I've always thought so. Anyway, as always, we thank you for listening. Check out our friends online, ChristyLemire.com, over at SiriusXM. Check out Rotten Tomatoes Radio with Matt Atchity and Gray Drake. Also, The Frank DeCaro Show and Derek and Romaine. And in the podcast universe, there is, of course, Fat Guys at the Movies and the Criterion Cast, Team Jack, because, you know, he'll make a new episode one of these days.
Yeah, baby.
The Schmoes Know, the B-Movies Podcast with Whitney and Bibbs, who got my name wrong last week. Oh, ha ha.
But that was a goof.
No, I know. It was an error on his part, but, you know, given that Mr. Bibbiani's name also ends in a pronounced vowel, you'd think he'd know.
By the way, we asked people to tell us what they hated about Bibbs.
No response.
No response.
Everybody loves Bibbs.
He's too lovable.
Yeah. So, sorry, Bibbs. We asked. Yeah,
we tried.
For hate mail and got none.
We tried.
Film Spotting, SVU, Pod Crash, The Game Night Guys, Secretly Timid, and The Lunch. You can subscribe to this show for free at iTunes. And while you're there, leave us a nice review. It helps us a lot. It guides more people towards finding the show. I haven't looked lately, so I don't know if we have new ones. If we have new ones and you left one, thank you for that. You can stream the show for free at StitcherRadio.com Stitcher Radio or at TheLounge.com or on our Facebook page, which you should totally like, Linoleum Knife Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at LinoleumCast. You can check into the show at TVTag.com, which is what Get Glue has turned into, but we're still on it, even though we're not a TV show, so hoo-ha. You can drop us a line with your top 10 lists of any kind or questions or comments or complaints at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. And reminding you once again, brand new selling on our website, linoleum-knife.com, is our commentary track for 1980s The Apple, directed by Menachem Golan. And you can get your own audio file of that by PayPaling $1.99 to linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Include your email and we will send it to you. You can listen to it while you're watching the movie, or you can listen to it while you're not watching the movie. Have a good Super Bowl Sunday. Go rent some Philip Seymour Hoffman movies this week, and we'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.